As promised, I am here in the studio with Neil Smith. Now, Neil is a board member of the Athens Cultural Center, and he hosts...
No, actually, that's the library.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah, so my information isn't quite correct. So, Neil, I should just let you tell me about you.
Well, simply... I'm on the Board of Trustees of the Athens Library presently, which I'm glad to be a part of. And let me say a little bit about the library, because the library has just changed directorship. And, of course, the whole thing of the library today is finding its way into the 21st century. And of course, with the technologies being what the technologies presently are, the library almost seems obsolete.
Oh.
Consequently, it becomes a matter for them finding a way to really, service the community now.
Right.
And without, losing ground. Mm-hmm. And presently, we have a new director, Jake Woodrick.
Okay.
Who has really turned out to be a rather good director, thank God.
Right, yeah, right.
And he's using the community, and he's using, the skills of the people of the community to get, the library up to speed. And so one of the things that is really kind of nice is that he's taken and, Meals on Wheels, he's doing Books on Wheels.
And oh, wow, that's great.
So
it's really forward-thinking.
Yeah, and so that is the kind of thing that's beginning to happen here at this very, very tiny library, if you don't know it.
Right.
Jake and I were talking once about music, and I told him I'm a jazz aficionado. And he said, right away, he jumped on it, and he said, look, let's put together a jazz program.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so from there on, I have a collection that spans some like 2,000 albums I've collected over,
Wow, 2,000?
This is like LPs.
Yeah, we should have had you bring some with you this morning.
would have added to it.
Yes.
And that collection I got because I was living in Manhattan for most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I would go to the library. Use all the five borough libraries.
Okay.
And they all had music collections.
Right, right.
So you can borrow, albums.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I would go, I would cull what it is from what it is they had, and I would choose the music I would go out and then purchase.
Yeah, that's good.
And also, fortunately, at that time, there was so much music that was happening in the city, so much... and I would frequent the clubs. I mean, I haunted the clubs.
Okay.
It was my music. And also, it's funny because now there's so much talk about, jazz is the least listened to music in our country presently.
Really? I love jazz.
It's the least...
But I recognize that's probably not the norm, especially when I'm looking at like my peers and people my age. And I actually first really got turned on to jazz through a movie.
Which one?
It was 1990s. The movie Love Jones came out, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it was one of the first black films after that whole blaxploitation era that didn't portray blacks as like gangsters and thugs, right? And so it came out in the it would have been the mid to late 90s while I was in college, and it was the movie that everybody was like, oh, you've got to go see Love Jones. And so I was first introduced to jazz music probably through that venue and Charlie Parker. And there is the Charlie Parker's In a Sentimental Mood is one of the songs on that soundtrack. And so that's how I first really got into Charlie Parker, was because of that movie. And so I'm a big Charlie Parker fan. And then I started looking for other things. I started, I was like, oh, this is good stuff. And this is part of, and I grew up on military bases and was exposed to, you know, black culture and black music kind of just through outings that my parents like tried to make sure that we went on. But I don't recall jazz being a huge part of that. Or, you know, if they turned it on, we'd be like, oh, that's that old people music that we would, you know, like as little, as small children, you know, like that's kind of was how we.
Though, if I, let me interrupt you. And that's because, you know, it's fascinating about jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating about jazz is that, you know, it's not a courant. As you know, it's not. What is essentially important about jazz is jazz has had the, when it, in its heyday, and it was really captured, you know, what was eminent in the community. Jazz, also the other thing about jazz is that jazz had always remained on the fringe. The artists were really fringe people. They were alienated from society per se. And it was almost a choice in many instances. Like, you know, they had, let's say, people like Ginsberg, Allen Ginsberg,
right.
A great poet,
mm-hmm.
Ferlin Getty, you know, Kerouac. These, what made these guys hit was that, you know, they were really on this fringe. They were, the jazz musicians, for the most part, were escaping the society. At the time, you know, black people were trying to become, you know, middle class, bourgeois, and so on.
Yeah, the bourgeoisie, yes.
The jazz musicians were saying, that's not freedom.
Mm.
And that, you know, to fall into the dominant culture, to accept it, you know, on its basis and its terms, that's not freedom.
Mm.
And that's what the jazz musicians have been saying up until recently.
Right.
And what the change is we forget that, you know, people like Louis Armstrong,
mm-hmm.
Who is one of my top favorites, and he is genius, you know.
Right.
He is really he's just the quintessential genius. He didn't know how to read music until he was in his 50s.
Wow, really? And he was in his 50s when he learned how to read music.
Count Basie never learned to read music.
Right.
And these, you know, and so you now what's happening, and all these guys, you know, they learned, we talked about Charlie Parker a moment ago. Charlie Parker, you know, the story is that, you know, in his Kansas days, and he was a young boy, and he got this horn, and he was blowing this horn, and he went down to a nightclub, you know, to play. And he got in this nightclub blowing, and the guys laughed him off stage.
Oh, really?
Mm.
I've never heard that story before. Wow. And look at it now, right?
Well, yeah, he went home and practiced. And it's interesting you talk about that movies, because there are two movies, one which Clint Eastwood made, and that is called Bird.
Okay.
And that's the Charlie Parker story.
Right.
And what's really good about the story is not so much the story, because Clint Eastwood misses a beat in the story, but what he doesn't miss is the music.
Hmm.
Charlie Parker's music runs the entire 2.5 hours.
Wow.
It's just ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really a treat. This is really important today in music is that Dexter Gordon made a movie before he died. This is maybe in the 70s, 80s, I can't remember exactly. But Dexter Gordon was one of the last, you know, finest saxophonists.
Okay.
And he had been out of the country for over 30 years because mm-hmm. he couldn't get a license in the country, you know, under those license laws, because he had been such a heavy drug addict. And he went to Denmark, where he nursed his music all along, all those years. In the meantime, here in the States, you know, after Miles Davis, after John Coltrane, after Ornette Coleman, these guys blew the house down.
Okay, right.
And it's one of the things that I come to think of with jazz is that jazz was also an expression of the Underground Railroad. And
say more about that.
Well, the thing about it is that these, as I said, these artists was running, you know, for freedom.
Right.
The whole expression was one of freedom, that the dominant culture did not express that freedom. And the jazz artists, they created their own rhythm. They created their own, language. And, you know, and they created the time.
Right.
You know, we don't think of jazz artists as being, morning birds.
Right.
We think them as being night owls.
Night owls. Mm-hmm.
And that's because everything is breaking the time. Everything is breaking, the status quo. And this is one reason why they would not accept it. In fact, it's interesting that the black middle class rejected jazz forever, even during the Harlem Renaissance. That the jazz musicians, because, you know, people like Dubois, right. Roy Wilkins, and the like, they were seeking an in.
Right.
And jazz musicians were seeking an out.
An out.
And so it was in conflict. And the fascinating thing about it all is that it's the jazz musicians who won the day.
Right, right.
Because they, you know, then, I mean, everybody who, it's so funny, it's that today what's really, the sad thing that happens, of course, with jazz is that after Dizzy Gillespie, John Coltrane.
Mm, yep.
John Coltrane was such a master. He, I recall lending a piece of my music to a dear friend of mine who died a few years back. And we were talking music. And he played some really strange stuff for me when we first got together. Which he thought I was going to, he thought I would leave the house, I'm sure.
Okay.
and it's, you know, and I think this was a tactic he had, which I developed myself, which is like, if you want to get rid of people, you play something like Pharoah Sanders doing something really wild.
And okay.
And most people, you know.
Most people will run. They'll head for the hills.
And he played this piece by someone, and I can't remember who. And I said, yeah, I've heard better, though. And so he said, like, who? And I said, John Coltrane, of course. And I lent him some of the last things that John Coltrane did.
Okay.
And, you know, and this one goes looks at John Coltrane's development.
Mm-hmm.
And he, from his beginnings, you watch this progress of a guy who develops and develops and develops. And as he develops, you know, he becomes more like Picasso, as Picasso develops.
Right.
We lose track. We think of Picasso, we always think of abstraction.
But he wasn't all abstraction.
Not all, that's right. And also, you remember when he was a kid, he was painting like Raphael.
Right.
And he said that if he continued that, he was going to stop, you know, painting because it left him with nowhere to go.
Right.
Well, this is the way it is. John Coltrane found himself.
You know, it's funny that when you started talking about you let him borrow these John Coltrane albums, I had a John Coltrane, Best of John Coltrane set that I purchased that I paid quite a lot of money for, and I let a friend borrow them, and I never got them back. So after that, my note to self was never let anybody borrow good jazz music, because you're not going to get your your CDs back.
Fortunately, this friend was a librarian.
Oh, okay.
So he definitely knew the rules.
I was like, oh man, I never got my CDs back. Yeah. Some of the best things that I've let people borrow over the years, I've never gotten them back. But so let's talk about, because you've got a workshop. Is it a workshop that's going on right now?
Yes, that's right. Presently, we are, the library is sharing, you know, the Athens Cultural Center in putting together this workshop. And tonight is an engagement. You know, it's 7 to 8:30 this evening. And tonight I'll be doing Swing to Bop. So we'll then, you know, take some of the great swing bands, Basie, you know, Benny Goodman, Ellington. In fact, what I dare say, Ellington is the way it is, I'm running this whole thing because Ellington is going to be featured all through it. If you're laying the groundwork in jazz, I think that you have to have a North Star.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellington is the North Star.
Okay.
You know, everybody says that this person's the king of jazz, this person is that of jazz. Ellington is jazz.
Right.
Ellington's development over the, 50-some-odd years of playing, you know, grows and grows and grows. And he starts out, in the Cotton Club in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, he's playing with John Coltrane.
Right.
Ellington's music, grows from these 3-minute pieces to these, suites.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the most delicious music you'll ever hear. In fact, I dare say, Ellington is considered the greatest composer this country knows.
Right.
And this is when you say... This is, old music. It's not old music. This is really fresh music. Sun Ra, people say jazz is dead. Sun Ra put it best. He said, it's not jazz that's dead. It's the musicians who are.
Oh. Okay. And I thought you were going to say maybe it's the people, but.
No. The ears. But, but what's happening is in our culture, tragically, is that we're accustomed to fast food.
Right, we want everything now.
And also, it's not only we want it now, but, it's we don't want to think about it afterwards.
Hmm.
Jazz, you've got to really digest it.
You do, it resonates with you.
Yeah,
I found that I can turn on a piece of jazz music, and it can be 2 or 3 days later, or something will come up. And you really, sometimes when I'm listening to... Charlie Parker, he's the person I listen to the most. You think about, wow, well, what was this person thinking about when they wrote this? Or, and with a lot of the music in popular culture, you don't have to wonder what they're thinking about, right? Because they tell you.
And it's usually not much.
Yeah. A lot of times it's not much, or there's no redeeming quality or value to it whatsoever. I feel like jazz allows you to think creatively, to connect with not just the music, but the underlying story that's at the base of the piece.
That's also is really fascinating because, quite frankly, remember, there's all these the spontaneity. There's a beautiful piece of Mal Waldron called Hard Talk that he does with Steve Lacy. And it's amazing how Steve Lacy's, soprano saxophone, Mal Waldron's piano, and you get this dialogue. And it's all through jazz. It's not just this one piece, but it's all through it. It's like these musicians get on the stage, they start a piece, and and they start going with this piece, and they find this spirit, and the spirit starts talking. It's almost like you're in church,
right?
And that's the thing that happens with jazz, and that's what makes jazz so fresh all the time, is that you end up with a spiritual, relationship.
Right. And there's a movement in a number of churches. I'm actually a pastor, mm-hmm. and I'm the pastor of the United Methodist Church in Catskill. And there's a movement in a number of churches now where they have jazz vespers. So there's an evening service that's just like music and prayer, but it's jazz. Which I don't know if you've seen any of those or not.
In the city, there was a priest who began that thing then. Who was it called? The jazz priest. He was the confessor of all the jazz musicians, interestingly enough.
Okay.
And he had a church on Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to play jazz from that church every Sunday. And it'd always be a jazz mass.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, but before I forget,
yes.
You were saying about the sessions that we're having here with this jazz.
Right, you said tonight is...
Tonight we're going to do from swing to bop.
Okay, from swing to bop. Now, do people have to pre-register?
No, just show up at the Cultural Arts Center. You know?
Okay.
And that's where it'll be taking place. And also, and then next week, we're going to just do the vocalists.
Okay.
The week following that, we'll go from cool to free jazz. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about John Coltrane. John Coltrane has to be one of the most exciting people jazz produced. Along with, there are so many, like Miles Davis, you know, was extraordinary. The thing about greatness, where it is, you know, one loses one's balance.
Right.
And, you know, and sadly, you know, with all this extraordinary music that Miles created, he too lost his balance. And, you know, and the sad stories that occur behind, you know, in this development, or lack thereof.
Now, when you say lost his balance, what do you mean?
Miles, there's a point where it is Miles found that he couldn't hear the music anymore.
Okay.
Evidently, he heard the music 24 hours a day for years and years and years in his head. And one day he woke up and the music was gone. And at that point, he locked himself away. He became disheveled. His electricity was cut off. His friends became concerned for him, would knock on his door. He wouldn't open the door. Some of them, fortunate enough, had the keys to get in so they can get him enough food to keep him alive. He just went to a bender with drugs and, and so on, and just fell into a whole depression, which he did not come out of, you know, maybe until the end of his life.
Wow.
And so those were the last years of Miles. And this is when Miles was doing, finally when he was desperate for money, he started doing jazz fusion.
Okay.
And, you know, and jazz, it's funny about this whole idea of fusion, because jazz doesn't really work that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, jazz is jazz.
Right.
But the term is such a beautiful term. Everyone likes it.
Yeah, fusion.
No, but I'm talking about jazz.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the fusion. I was like, well, okay.
Jazz has such mystique.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you want to say something like, say sexy, jazz. You know, and it's on everybody's lips, but nobody knows what it is.
That's
exactly.
Right, jazz. Yeah.
If those out there who want to find out what jazz is, come to make tonight's program at the Cultural Arts Center in Athens. Because where I'm really going, I ambitiously call this Jazz from A to Z. In 5 easy lessons. But I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's a lot to cover in 5 lessons. No, you're clearly a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, you said something earlier about the jazz vocalists. And that's something I've never really... Jazz vocalists, I've always said to people when they're like, oh, but I like such and such. I've always said... Yeah, I feel like the vocals kind of mess it up, but I'm sure you probably feel differently, but I don't know. I feel like something happens when you bring the vocalist into jazz, into like the instrumental jazz.
Well, you know, actually, we take voices such as Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday is the quintessential jazz singer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because Billie Holiday, demonstrates the blues.
Right.
Billie Holiday, is one of these women. I mean, the story, Billie Holiday opens her autobiography with the language, the words, my father was 18 years old, my mother was 16, and I was 3. Then, she in her development of story, she talks about living with her grandmother and who she would sleep with all the time, taking naps with all the time. And at the age of 13, they're about 12, she was in her grandmother's arms and fell asleep with her grandmother. And when she woke up, Billie Holiday woke up, her grandmother was dead.
Wow, and how old was she?
She would be about 12, 13.
Wow.
And she was locked in her grandma's embrace. and could not get out until the undertaker came and broke the arms of our grandmother. And so, interesting, you listen to Billy's voice, you realize it really doesn't develop much after that as a child. I mean, voice remains that young voice.
Mm-hmm.
In a real sense, you get the feeling that Billie Holiday would be the black Marilyn Monroe.
Mm, okay.
She was beautiful. She never grew up. And she was always a victim of men. And she expressed it beautifully in her songs. Brilliantly
right.
in her songs.
She did. I played some Billie Holiday last week, actually.
And then there's Sarah Vaughan.
Okay.
Who,
now, when you said Sarah Vaughan's name, your eyes lit up like, pow. I wish you all could have seen that. So let's talk about Sarah Vaughan.
I really wish I could tell you. You need to put Sarah Vaughan on.
Okay.
And I suggest everybody listen to Sarah Vaughan singing Send in the Clowns.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that you get to hear a voice that does things that no one believes even the best operatic singer might be able to do.
Okay.
But she does it with a full jazz intonation. And she happens to have probably, arguably, the best voice in the history of music. Now, there is a statement for you.
Wow, that's huge. Send
yes.
in the Clowns.
And the thing is, and that argument is not made solely by myself. This argument is made roundly by many, many other musicians. In fact, one of, I can't think of his name right now, a great classical director and cellist had wrote a piece on Sarah Vaughan. You know, and he says that Sarah Vaughan managed in a lifetime to develop what it took, you know, Renaissance Europe to develop over its years of operetta, 700 years. And she was able to do it in a lifetime.
Wow.
So this is the thing that Sarah Vaughan, what Sarah Vaughan can do with her voice, no one I've ever heard, you know, do.
Right, yeah, that sounds amazing. And I found Sarah Vaughan's Send in the Clowns. So we can pause for a moment and I can play that the listeners. And here is, let me find that again. Here is Sarah Vaughan with the Count Basie Orchestra, Send in the Clowns.
Move. We're all the clouds, send in the clouds. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure, my my fault, I feel. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. Send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer losing my time even this late in my career?
And that was Sarah Vaughan with Send in the Clowns. That was fantastic.
So it is.
Yes, it is. That was fantastic and really amazing. And thank you so much for being here in the studio with me this morning for coming in early. Usually people don't start rolling in here until about 9:30 or quarter till, so I'm in the studio by myself, but it was wonderful having you here. And again, your workshops are
Wednesday evenings from 7 to 8:30, presently held at the Cultural Arts Center in Athens. And I want to once again thank the Athens Cultural Center for, you know, housing this, and for the library for putting this on. I also want to, thank the libraries specifically for all their endeavors.
Right.
You know, they're really stepping up to the plate, and that's one of the most. And I love the library system better than anything else because it has that spirit of jazz in that it's independent, and you can you can run away with what it is you want to run away with. And leave that behind.
Yes, and libraries, I feel like, have an especially difficult task now in the age of information and how everything is moving to, you know, an online format. And so hats off to you for being involved and engaged there and really working to help move our libraries forward so that they don't become forgotten.
Exactly, exactly.
All right. Well, Neil, thank you so much. And I'm going to work to have Neil back with us in the near future.